You are listening to episode number 249 of Better Blood Sugars with Delaine MD. Welcome to Better Blood Sugars with Delaine MD, where you can learn strategies to lower your blood sugars and improve your overall health. I'm your host, Dr. Delaine Vaughn. Ladies, if you know you're capable of doing badass things at work and for your family, but you're confused and frustrated with why you can't seem to stop eating the chocolate cake, this podcast is for you. Let's talk. Hey there, and welcome to the podcast. Thank you for taking some time today to devote to you and your health and what's important to you. I think that it's important to recognize when we're doing that. It is late at night. It is a late night podcast recording. I feel like a DJ, like a late night DJ right now. It is a late night podcast recording. It's important to me to have these podcasts out to you once a week. So I always do that. And this week just kind of got away from me. We're doing a bunch of home projects and the day just got away. And although I knew what I was doing the podcast over, I hadn't had time to get it recorded until late on a Sunday evening. So the podcast will definitely be recorded by Monday morning and be out to everybody. But this is definitely a late night recording. So if you're seeing it on YouTube, you're seeing a late night recording. If you have any questions on YouTube as this broadcast live, please make sure you let me know. Put it in the comments. I will get to it. This month in the podcast, I'm going to be focusing on chronic illnesses and chronic diseases that we see in America and how insulin resistance plays a role in that. There's a term in my, when I was in residency, we talked about this, although I Googled it and like there's nothing about it, but we certainly had this phrase about it in residency. And it was called, what we talked about was the primary care value pack. And it's sort of like a fast food value pack. If you think about things, you know, in a fast food value pack that come together, it's a sandwich, fries, and a soda, right? The primary care value pack was things that came together in medicine, things that came together in diseases. And the value pack was hypertension, dyslipidemia, or cholesterol issues, and diabetes. These chronic conditions come together. And where you see one, you're going to see at least one, if not both of the others. And so this month, we're going to talk about those chronic conditions and how the, you know, the root cause of being insulin resistance is causing these. I was going to do hypertension and dyslipidemia together, but I felt like it was getting big. And so I decided to break those up and we'll do cholesterol in a future podcast. And then I will probably lump some of the other ones together. I think that there's a really clear, there are a number of really clear pathways that link insulin resistance with hypertension and dyslipidemia. So those have just a lot more information behind them. Some of the other ones don't have as many, and maybe it's just because they're not part of the value pack that I'm used to talking about, but I'll try to lump some of those others together. You know, I preach and I talk about insulin resistance being the trunk of a tree, right? The insulin resistance is a trunk of a tree, but the diseases that it causes are the different branches within that tree. So diabetes is one branch. Polycystic ovarian syndrome is another branch. Non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is another branch. Dementia is another branch. Cholesterol issues or dyslipidemia is another branch. Hypertension is another branch. There's all these different diseases that are caused by this one root cause. And that's really why they're a value pack, why they run together. I would offer that insulin resistance either plays a huge role or is the root cause of most of the chronic conditions that we see in the American healthcare system. So it makes sense that the value pack goes together because they all have a common cause. Okay. So today we're going to talk about hypertension and insulin resistance, how it impacts and I feel causes insulin resistance. This is kind of, or how insulin resistance causes hypertension. This is kind of new information for me. I'm having a hard time breaking up with the SALT hypothesis and also the genetic hypothesis, but that, I mean, there's definitely a lot of evidence that insulin resistance is at the root cause of this. And certainly we are seeing worsening. I mean, I've read studies that talk about, you know, is it salt causing causing hypertension? And they label the salt at the salt at the eating table. They label the salt with a tracer that we can pick up in the urine. And what we realize is that it's not the amount of salt that we are getting at the table that we are putting on our food from a salt shaker. That is not what is causing the hypertension. It's the processed foods. And in my brain, I'm like, yeah, because most of the sodium is coming from the processed food. But now that I'm hearing this, these other mechanisms of how insulin resistance is causing hypertension, I'm starting to wonder if it's not the salt that is in processed foods. Yes, processed foods has a substantial amount of salt associated with it. But in addition to that, there is also the insulin resistance that is caused by these processed foods. And so I'm starting to wonder if that's not really what's going on. So there are a number of hypotheses that we have been taught, that I was taught in training as a medical provider, that cause hypertension. One is genes. One is salt, nicotine use, and then alcohol use were probably the lifestyle modifications that we saw. Lack of exercise, I know that I have promoted and I've said this and I still believe it on some level, but when we exercise, our body releases certain chemicals that actually relax our blood vessels so our blood pressure can go down. The, you know, classic medical approach was that, you know, genes are an issue, salt's an issue, nicotine, alcohol, lack of exercise. These are the things that are causing hypertension. There is an increasing body of evidence that ties the cause of hypertension with insulin resistance. So before we dive in, I do want to talk about what is meant by blood pressure. Blood pressure is the amount of pressure that the heart has to exert on the vascular system, the vessels, in order to move blood through our body, okay? So the effectiveness of the pump is one element of blood pressure, but then the what we call compliance, or how relaxed those vessels are, is another element of this. Okay, so if you think about a water pump and a hose system, like a sprinkler system, the water pump could be broken or faulty or not working well. But also, if you think about the hose, if the hose is very stiff, there's going to have to be a certain amount of pressure that's overcome, or that has to be provided to overcome that stiffness. Versus if the hose is relaxed and maybe floppy, like almost like a fire hose, that's going to have a different, less pressure that has to be put out to overcome the stiffness of that hose. And then the other element of the hose that you look at is how small of a diameter of the hose. If the hose is really wide and big, the pressure that has to go out, no matter how stiff it is, the pressure that has to go out is held, is not significant. It's less than if the circumference or the diameter, the caliber of the hose was very small. If the caliber of the hose is very small, even if the walls of the hose are flexible and not stiff, there's still a lot of pressure that has to be put in there to overcome the small caliber, okay? So it's the flexibility of the walls of the hose as well as the caliber of the hose that really dictate how much pressure the pump has to produce. And this is also true with our blood vessels and the heart. The heart's the pump, the vessel are the vessels are the hose. Okay. So let's talk about insulin resistance. Insulin resistance is established as a known, it's a known associated condition with heart disease, and that includes hypertension, that includes, of course, cholesterol issues, that also includes things like congestive heart failure, cardiomyopathies, so enlarged hearts that aren't pumping correctly. Again, this is a pump issue, right? So some scientists out there actually will state, you know, is it insulin resistance that's causing it? Well, I mean, it's hard to make that, to do those studies to develop, is insulin resistance causing hypertension? But what scientists are starting to realize is where heart disease is, there is underlying insulin resistance. We are very, very, very rarely finding heart disease without insulin resistance. And since we've gotten better at looking for insulin resistance, not just diabetes or high blood sugars, since we've gotten better at looking for true insulin resistance, we're actually finding that the insulin resistance is there when there is heart disease or hypertension, even if blood sugars have not risen to the point that they have a diagnosis of diabetes. Okay. So a lot of scientists are starting to say, like where one goes, the other one is. You just need to look for it and find it. Today, I want to dig into some of the underlying mechanisms for how hypertension is caused by insulin resistance. So let's talk for a minute about what insulin resistance means. Insulin resistance occurs when there is too much insulin. Okay. For type 2 diabetes, insulin levels are chronically elevated, too much insulin, which means our cells don't respond to the insulin effectively or appropriately. In the setting of managing our energy, our cellular energy, what insulin does is allows our cells to open up and bring glucose inside and burn glucose off as energy. Okay. When we are insulin resistant, that isn't happening. Our cells aren't getting effective energy sourcing. That's one issue. But the second issue is our glucose on the outside of the cell is climbing quite high. Okay. So insulin has this effect, right, of moving glucose inside. But insulin also has other effects on cells that have nothing to do with this energy metabolism or managing our energy. And when we get insulin resistant, these other things that insulin also does are impacted. They're negatively impacted. They're changed and there's alterations. Just like when we're insulin resistant on this energy metabolism level, then there's a change in our energy metabolism. So what we frequently talk about again is this moving the glucose inside the cell and burning it as energy. What is also happening is there are effects on our body that are leading to hypertension and again, cholesterol issues and dementia, although that's an energy issue, and cardiomyopathy. And that is thought to be an energy metabolism issue also, like how the cell. How the heart cells are not getting glucose effectively to be able to continue to pump. And instead, they're starting to form inflammatory changes because they have to pump or we die. And they don't have the effect or like appropriate energy to do that. So, yes, all of that's happening. But in addition, there are things that are happening that lead to hypertension. So, there's a few mechanisms. We're going to talk about vasodilation. We're going to talk about salt intake. And then we're going to talk about the fight or flight, sympathetic nervous system. How insulin actually turns on our sympathetic nervous system. These are all things I didn't know that I actually had to learn as I was researching this podcast. So there are a number of other ways we're not even going to talk about today that insulin actually does lead to hypertension. So let's talk about vasodilation. When we were talking about those vessels and the caliber of the vessels, and we talked about the wider or the more dilated, the bigger the caliber is of those vessels, the less pressure has to be exerted on those vessels to move blood through them. Okay. Whereas if they're the smaller or if they're vasoconstricted, a constricted vessel, a smaller caliber vessel, we said has more pressure behind it. So there's a few things that are affecting the dilation of these vessels. Again, when they're wide open and they're dilated, blood flows through them easily, and the pressure that needs to be exerted on those vessels is very low. In normal functioning vessels, and these non-insulin resistant vessel, like the cells that line our vessels, insulin actually causes the release of a chemical called nitric oxide. Okay. You may be familiar with this chemical if you've ever had nitroglycerin or heard of somebody getting nitro or they got a little 0.4, I think it's a 0.4 milligram tablet, and they're supposed to put one nitro under their tongue every 5 minutes if they have chest pain, right? Like if you've ever heard about this is what we're talking about. It's nitroglycerin, it's nitric acid, and it allows our vessels to dilate. That's what it does. Our body produces this every day, all day long as we're not insulin resistant. Okay. It's a good thing. It allows blood to flow easily through our vessels without any pressure or with little pressure. So, what happens with insulin resistance? And remember, insulin resistance is when insulin's present a lot, all the time, too much at high concentrations. So, insulin is a growth factor. Okay. Like it makes our fat cells grow, it makes us grow. It helps our babies grow when women are pregnant. Insulin has a growth factor effect and it stimulates growth in our cells, in our tissue, in our bodies. In addition to all of those things that we just talked about, it also causes our blood vessels to grow. But growth of our blood vessels is not happening in length. It's happening in wall thickness. So it makes the vessel walls thicker, okay? And this leads to a smaller diameter of the vessel because the vessels don't grow outward, they grow inward. The impact of insulin on the vessels happens on the innermost layer of the vessel. So it's actually having it grow inward, decreasing the diameter of the vessel, making it smaller, which means it's a smaller caliber hose or tube, which means the heart has to pump harder, has to create more pressure behind that to get blood pushed and passing through there. That creates a higher blood pressure, of course. Similar to a smaller hose versus a dilated hose, right? This is the same experience. If it's a smaller hose, you have to put more pressure behind it. If the bigger hose, you don't, okay? So when we have high concentrations of insulin, over a prolonged period of time, that growth signal to those vessels is always on, and it causes more and more growth of that inner part of the vessel, and it decreases the caliber of the vessels. So that's one way that it does it. This nitric oxide effect, like that inner part of the vessel is also impacted to produce nitric oxide to allow that to relax. That does happen with insulin, right? Insulin floats through our system and those inner vessels, they're like, hey, insulin's here. That's awesome. Let's dilate. Let's release this nitric oxide and dilate. But when we're insulin resistant, just like when our cells are supposed to say, oh, glucose is around, insulin's here, let's open up and bring that glucose inside and let's burn it off as energy or as fuel. Just like that, stops happening when we're insulin resistant. In addition, the vessels, the inner part of the vessels, the cells, they're called endothelial cells. Those endothelial cells that line the vessels become insulin resistant and they stop releasing that nitric oxide to relax those vessels so that they can be a wider caliber. Okay. So these two things occur at the vascular level to increase blood pressure, okay? This is a double whammy that's caused by high insulin levels. The high insulin levels are causing the vessels to be smaller in caliber, and they're causing our vessels not to release a chemical, this nitric oxide, that will relax them and make it easier for the blood to pump through them, okay? The final effect of this is, of course, we're going to have higher blood pressure. We're going to have hypertension, okay? The heart can maintain this higher blood pressure for a while, but after some amount of time, the heart actually starts to fail, and that's called hypertensive cardiomyopathy or hypertensive heart disease. This will cause your heart to, it's kind of like a pump being asked to pump against too much pressure, and it can't do it. It breaks. So now I want to talk about salt intake. We've frequently been told less salt is the answer to hypertension, or to watch dietary salt in order to maintain a normal blood pressure or prevent the development of hypertension. There has never been any really great evidence-based recommendations for salt intake, just so you know. And if you've been watching or listening to your doc or your medical provider, and they've been telling you through the years, like, you need to watch or you need to take this much, you know, salt, or you need to limit your salt to this or that. And it used to be 4 grams, and then it was 3 grams. And I think it's now down to 2.3 grams, but more than 1.5 grams. The reason that there's never been a firm amount of salt that you should be eating is because there's no evidence behind that at all. There's just not. So no need to remember any of those numbers because it's irrelevant in controlling your blood pressure, okay? Now, there are people out there who are salt sensitive, but again, insulin resistance is a huge impactor on that even. So insulin resistance is a major player in this blood pressure by its effect on a hormone called aldosterone. Aldosterone is produced in your kidneys, and it's meant to cause you to hold on to salt and water. Wherever salt goes, water goes. That was a physiology mantra that we heard both in undergraduate and then in medical school training. Wherever salt goes, water goes. So any time that our kidneys will hold on to salt, we're also going to hold on to water. And having more water in the pump system is going to mean there's going to be more pressure, period, end of sentence. So if there's a leak in your pump, your water pressure goes down, right? If there's like a leak in your plumbing, wherever, you know, the water is going beyond that leak is going to have less water pressure. Okay. So if there's more water in the system, then there's more pressure in the system. So anytime that we're retaining salt and water follows salt, there is going to be more pressure in the system. So when we are insulin actually leads to increased aldosterone production. Okay. So if you're insulin resistant, remember you have high levels of insulin all the time. You have insulin in your system all the time, which is not really how the human body is meant to be under the effect of insulin. We're supposed to have insulin in our system when we eat, and then we have spells of time where we don't eat, and that allows the insulin level to drop. This is like evolutionarily how we are. This is just how our biology works. 10,000 years ago, when our biology started, I don't know, it was probably even changing way before then. 10,000 years ago is probably way too recent for some of these changes, right? But when our biology, the way our biology is and the way it was evolved or developed was just that there was not food on every corner. We were not eating all day long 10,000 years ago. And if we were eating all day long, it was very small amounts. It was not these huge meals. We did not, our human body is not really designed to consume food and process food all day long. When we are insulin resistant, it's probably because we were eating all day long. Like that's part of the issue. But also your body has insulin in its system all the time. It's very hard to get the insulin level low. This is why insulin resistance is so tightly associated with adiposity or having extra weight on our bodies also. Because in order to burn this energy that you've stored as adipose or fat tissue, in order to burn that, you have to lower your insulin level so low that that insulin keeps you from burning that fat. So you have to have that signal shut off in order to tap into the stored energy and burn it. Okay. So when we're insulin resistant, you have insulin in your system all the time. And if insulin in your system tells your body to make aldosterone, as long as you're insulin resistant and have insulin in your system all the time, you are turning on this hold on to salt and bring more water in signal. Okay. So you're creating more water in your system. It's interesting. The women that I work with in my group, when I know that they're starting to reverse their insulin resistance, what I see is this effect. And it's a joke in the group. We're like, oh, weight just starts to jump off your body. Pounds jump off. Every day it's a pound. It's 2 pounds down. And it happens for maybe 2 or 3 weeks. And you probably, like a lot of women, will lose like 15, 20 pounds in that time frame. And they think it's amazing. And yes, there is some adipose burning that's happening. You're burning off some of your fat. That's absolutely happening. But in addition, you're not holding on to all of that water all of the time. You're peeing off tons of this water, okay? It's a big water weight shift is really what it is. And this effect of aldosterone is likely what's causing this. When we stop producing insulin all day long and having our cells and our bodies and our systems and our organs exposed to insulin all day long, what that allows to happen is there's no more aldosterone produced, or it's not produced all day long. And suddenly our body stops holding on to salt and stops holding on to water, and it pees it all off. So here's the deal. If you're always exposed to insulin and it's always sending the message to hold on to salt, it does not matter how little salt you eat in a day. Like your dietary salt intake is irrelevant because you're sending your body a message to hold on to any salt, even the salt that's already been in your system or the salt that's, you know, necessary in your body, right? It's necessary to run some of our biochemical mechanisms in our system. We have to have some sodium. We have to have some chloride. So it doesn't matter if you're sending this message to your kidneys that's constantly saying, hold on to salt. It doesn't matter how much you lower your salt intake. You're not going to get low enough because it's not the salt intake that's the issue. It's the insulin resistance. So lastly, I want to talk about the fight or flight system. I talk about this a lot. This is the sympathetic nervous system. It's the part of our nervous system that's run by stressors, and it's set off by anything that really is a threat to us. So again, this system developed in order for us to avoid and evade death. That's what kept us going as human beings. That's what made us the dominant species on this planet. Okay. This amazing fight or flight system is meant to save our lives, literally save our lives. Okay. 10,000 years ago, it was saving us from a saber tooth or whatever was around trying to kill us. Today, we stress out about all sorts of things that are not going to kill us. Bills, fights, arguments with family or loved ones, stressors at work, bosses that are turds. I mean, all these things. These are the things that we stress out about now that engage this fight or flight, this sympathetic nervous system. What also happens in this is that it causes our blood pressure to go up, right? So we're like, oh, we all need to get to our zen state and not be so stressed. And maybe that's true. But how insulin resistance impacts this is interesting. Okay. When you're trying to run away from a saber tooth, you don't want blood vessels that are really lax and, so like flexible. Because if you change position, you need to have blood that's getting pumped, right? So if you do a roll, say you do a somersault, your blood in those vessels, if those blood vessels are too lax, are prone to what gravity is doing to your body. So if you go to stand up real quick, what happens? Gravity pulls that blood down. If you have really lax, blood vessels and you go to stand up and gravity pulls that blood down, you no longer have blood in your brain and you pass out. And this happens all the time. It's called orthostatic hypotension. Okay. Low blood pressure that's caused by a change in position, orthostasis. Okay. So when you're fighting a saber tooth, when you're running from something, you do not want your blood pressure to be at the whim of gravity. Okay. You don't want the blood in your brain that keeps you conscious and not passing out to be at the whim of gravity. So we do run higher blood pressures under this fight or flight mechanism, the sympathetic nervous system component. Okay. So insulin, interestingly, turns on that fight or flight mechanism, that sympathetic response. It's a modest intensity. Like, it's not like we eat food and we're suddenly stressed out so much and like we're all edgy. It's not like that. But to a modest degree, insulin definitely engages the fight or flight mechanism. And of course, the more insulin you got floating around, if you're insulin resistant, the more it's turned on. So it's not like just an off or on switch. Insulin present, it's on. Insulin not present, it's off. It's a degree. The more insulin that's present, the more the system is turned on, causing your blood pressure to be high. Okay, so if insulin's always present in your system, always at a high amount, you are going to have a higher blood pressure because of the system. So you know me, I'm always like, human beings are not meant to eat this way, right? So improving your insulin resistance is going to improve your blood pressure, hands down. This is kind of a well-known experience. It's also interesting with the family medicine or the primary care value pack that I was speaking of in the beginning of the podcast, that we always used to say, if you can just lose 10 to 15%, and there's great studies about this, if you can just lose 10 to 15% of your body weight, we see improvement in all three of those. And of course, now I'm looking at it from a different angle and I'm like, yeah, because if you can start losing weight, the root cause of all of those things, overweightness, hypertension, diabetes, and cholesterol issues, the root cause of all of those things is insulin resistance. And if you can start losing weight, you're going to decrease the insulin resistance just as a, I mean, like how you lose weight is causing your insulin levels to drop lower, period, end of sentence. And if you can do that, you're reversing your insulin resistance. So you're going to see improvement on all of those. Okay. Improving insulin resistance, hands down, will improve most of your chronic conditions. So again, this month, we're going to go through a lot of this and different chronic conditions. I'm going to discuss some of them. If there's one that you're interested in hearing about, please send me an email, delaine@delainemd.com. I'm happy to mention it or to touch on it, or at least give you an answer, an email, and tell you that I don't know, maybe, but I'm happy to give you the information as I understand it. So if you're interested in a specific chronic condition that you have, please send me an email, delaine@delainemd.com. I'm happy to answer that. So the interesting thing about all of this is insulin resistance can show up in your yearly lab work in a variety of different ways. And it can show up in your cholesterol panel. It can show up in your liver enzymes. It can show up in all different ways long before your blood sugars climb to a point that a doctor is going to say, hey, I think you're diabetic. Maybe we put you on meds. You're going to see evidence of insulin resistance in your labs long before that. Many women aren't told this. We're not told that anything is wrong with your labs until your A1C gets in the diabetic range, or maybe even in the pre-diabetic range. Some doctors don't even address the pre-diabetic range. So even though your labs, if you're looking with a keen eye, you can see evidence of insulin resistance long before those blood sugars rise, if you're looking for it, okay? So if you're concerned about this, hop on a 20-minute call with me. We can discuss your lab findings. It's 20, 30 minutes. We'll sit. We'll talk about your lab findings and if there's any evidence of insulin resistance, or is it just your blood sugar, right? Like maybe it's just your blood sugar. That does happen. It's not very common, but it happens. If you're pre-diabetic and you're like, well, I think I'm pre-diabetic, but the doctor wasn't that excited about it. Let's hop on a call. Let's talk about where else is there evidence of insulin resistance. So you can have a good idea of like, how far down this road am I? You can schedule this by sending me an email, delaine@delainemd.com. I'm happy to get that scheduled for you. If you want to get access to my calendar directly, go to www.calendly, that's C-A-L-E-N-D-L-Y, like calendar, but calendly.com/delainemd. So www.calendly.com/delainemd. You can click on the Better Blood Sugars Lab Review, and we will go through and review your labs. Get on my calendar. Again, you can send me the information. I will let you know what information I need so that we can determine all of this, okay? So don't hesitate to set that up. I will give you some clarity on where you're seeing evidence of insulin resistance and how much impact you're going to get in improving that, and some straightforward advice about how to move forward with that, okay? So that is what I have for you today about hypertension and kind of insulin resistance and its impact, okay? Before we end, you know I want you to be careful. I want you to do this smart. If you are on medications for your type 2 diabetes, understand that you have been medicated for the way that you've eaten in the past. If you change the way you eat, you are going to need to change your medications. If you do not do this, if you do not watch your medications and have somebody guiding you on how to change them, and you change the way you eat, you can get very, very sick. The kind of sick that involves going to the emergency department or possibly even death. And that is not why you are making these changes, okay? You're making these changes to have longevity and vitality in your life. And going to the hospital is not that, and certainly dying is not that. I need you to be very, very careful making any of the changes that I recommend in this podcast. I need you to call your doctor. I need you to get a good line of communication open with them. I need you to find out how they want to hear about your blood sugars. And then I want you to find out how they intend to tell you what they want you to do differently with your medications. Okay. If you're not sure what to do dietary wise to make those changes, you can find my 14 Days to Better Blood Sugar Guide. This is a workbook for you. It's 14 days of breakfast, lunches, and dinners that if you eat this way, you will lower your blood sugars. I've yet to hear anybody eat this way for 14 days and not see better blood sugars. It's such a powerful tool, but if you're medicated, please call your doctor because it is so powerful. You will see your blood sugars come down. And if you're on meds, you'll get very sick with that. So call your doctor, get a line of communication open with them, figure out how they're going to tell you to come off your meds, and then implement that 14 Days to Better Blood Sugar Guide. You can find that at delainemd.com/better. That will get you to that guide. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook, DelaineMD in both of those platforms. As always, if you have any questions, do not hesitate to send me an email, delaine@delainemd.com. Happy to answer anything. Lastly, if you have I do have an ask for you. If you are enjoying this podcast, if you are getting benefits from this podcast, please rate and review this podcast on your podcast player. The more ratings and reviews this podcast get, the more people the podcast players offer my podcast to, okay? If you understand that 9 out of 10 Americans have insulin resistance, when we look at their labs, that's a study that's been replicated twice now. If you understand that 9 out of 10 of us have insulin resistance, then there's a lot of people out there that need to hear this information. We do not need to be sick and tied to the healthcare system for the rest of our life. It is entirely possible to live naturally healthy lives. So please rate the podcast so more people can hear this. If you're not listening on a podcast player, if you're listening through my website, share it with your friends on Instagram and Facebook and any other social media. Lastly, guys, keep listening to these podcasts. Keep avoiding the foods that are making you sick and keep making choices in favor of your vitality and your health. And I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.